I think we have about maybe 20 minutes here, so I want you to think about some questions that you would like to ask. It could be about how we raise children, or how we do balance our life in ministry, how we raise dogs, you know, and just in a moment we'll give you a chance to respond, but maybe you can just talk about your role and kind of what you do at Dream City.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for allowing us. I can't believe I'm on the stage. This is dangerous. Usually something not done. But I am so happy to be here to share and meeting so many amazing pastors from all over. What an honor it is. So we don't take this lightly, sitting up here speaking into your lives. You guys are world changers. But I will have to say that Luke is so gracious to let me and my personality, when we just heard about employing our gifts and identifying what are our gifts. And we don't always identify what those gifts are right off the bat. And we struggle to search and find those and be comfortable with those gifts because they don't look like other people's gifts, especially in the pastor's wife's world. We should be playing the piano and singing or preaching even. And that's not something that I have started to do or have done, speaking in front of people and preaching a message. So that certainly is an insecurity, but Luke just absolutely embraces and employs the things that I can do well. And at first it was just serving behind the scenes, loving people, being real, being approachable, having fun with our congregation, and they just seemed to embrace that. So that was another area that just began to encourage me. And then it developed into being a part of our Christmas programs and our shows. And I started back scenes and was handing out props and being behind the scenes. I thought that was fun. And then I auditioned. And we have literal, legitimate auditions. You have to have a headshot, and you have to submit it and audition in front of a judging panel. It's very intimidating. But it's really great that we give adults as well as young people an opportunity to have a legitimate theater experience. And part of that is the discomfort of auditioning in front of people. So I went through that process and was part of the show for quite a few years. And there became a need where they were really expanding into finding other choreographers. And I did not have a dance background. So it was very strange that they would be reaching out to me in that way of leadership. And long story short, I took a scene and developed it in the creative way that they allowed me, with through costumes and concept. And you take that group of kids and adults mixed, and you are their mentor, you're their leader for a good 2 months. And so you are a small family in mentoring those people in their lives, and they really depend on you. And you rely on them, because without them, you wouldn't have your scene. So there's about 8 to 9 different choreographers that develop their scenes, and then we come together for tech and dress rehearsals. So it has certainly opened up a whole new world for me. I'm very involved in our arts, and so grateful that Luke has opened up that as our priority of our church, that we're really pouring into the arts program.
Yeah, so like you said, context is very important. So for years, my dad, who pastored the church, was a very big thinker, you know, and he wanted to do things that would really impact the city. And so part of that every year was to have an annual Christmas production. And it started off with 10 performances, then 11. And this past year we had 17 performances, and every seat is filled for all 17 performances. So it's 60, 70,000 people were impacted through these performances. And we started off by giving all the seats away free, maybe 15 years ago. And then people began to complain that, why don't you sell tickets? We don't want to wait in these long lines to have to get in for free tickets. Why don't you sell tickets? And so then we started selling half the seats. And then people complained about that. So now every year at the production, I stand up for the people and say, you're a hard crowd to please. We give seats away. You complain about that. We sell them. You know, you complain about that. So now we sell half the seats every year. Last year we sold about 32,000 tickets for the Christmas production, and the other half were given away free of charge. But it takes about 1,000 people a night to pull off the Christmas production. But the opportunity that we have to share the gospel, let me tell you a little bit about the philosophy behind the arts and why we do the Christmas production. It's about 1 hour and 40 minutes long. The first hour is all about what the world has made Christmas. And so we have fun. You know, it's about the Christmas trees and the lights and, you know, the funny stories of culture. We're breaking down that hard shell and their image of what church is all about. And then the second part is all about the real meaning of Christmas. And every time we do a production, we give people an opportunity to, you know, accept the Lord as their personal Savior. To us, it's not worth doing the program unless you're giving a very direct response time for people to receive the Lord. A lot of times, young pastors come to our dream conference, and they'll get inspired, and they'll go out, and they'll start doing these big things, and they'll start making an impact in their city, and all of a sudden, more people are coming, and then the big Christmas production happens, and the mayor will come. And the mayor will come and sit right in the front row, and then that dirty rascal young pastor will bail out and not give the invitation, you know, because the mayor is there. And we always say that we hope when the mayor is there that the camel comes down and burps all over the mayor if that happens, because there's only one reason to do these productions. That's to win people to Jesus Christ. That's the whole bottom line for why it's done. And so, you know, part of our 10-year vision, as I talked about, was that we knew we were strong in the arts. We knew that that was part of our DNA of our church. It had been for years. And so we said, how can we take that to a new level? So you want to talk about the summer musical?
Our drama director is very wise in expanding. We used to reach out just to our church community. Those are the people that auditioned and participated in our Christmas show. He's like, to expand our talent and to reach our mission of reaching other people, we have open auditions to the community. And so it's done very professional.
For the summer musical.
For the summer musical. And so we put it out on all the sites that normal theater people would circulate, and they come and they audition. And this being a church is a big wall for many of the theater people to go. They will say, no, we're not going to. And we've had a few people break that wall down for us because they auditioned and they participated and they're very active in the theater community and had those predispositions about a church. Will those church members be judgmental? Are they pious? Are they mean? Are they cliquey? And we were able to just have an amazing experience with church members rubbing shoulders with theater community members. And we do set different standards up front for example, changing areas. And so in the theater world, there's a few things that we just really want to tighten the screws and make things comfortable for both sides. And so we're upfront about that. But we have an amazing experience with the theater people, and they then will come back to another Christmas show, maybe other opportunities that are open to the church community. So we have them writing emails after they're done with the summer musical, and then that goes out to the other people who already have those predispositioned ideas of church, and we are now breaking down those
sure.
walls.
And this has been one of the biggest wins for us. We didn't set out to do the summer musicals for that purpose. We set out just so we could be a great place of family entertainment, you know, and it would be a bridge back into the church. However, the LGBTQ community now has begun to come to our summer musical. They audition, you know. They're on our stage for the summer musical, not the Christmas musical, but the summer musical. And what that has done is it's really allowed us to have a voice into their life. And we are seeing people come to our church. Angel and I had dinner at a couple who have been married for 28 years, two gentlemen. And they came to our church, and they were gloriously saved. And they're asking us, and we went to the house for dinner. It was a wonderful dinner, you know. It's pretty amazing. And at the dinner time, and beautiful home, too.
Shot?
Yeah, it was very well, you know, great.
I don't cook like that.
What's that? No.
Okay.
But anyway.
Personal.
What?
Took it personal.
Okay. So we were having dinner, and they were asking us questions like, how do we now get a divorce? We have been married 29 years and we care about each other, but we know this is not right to live this way. And so now they have been divorced, they're living in the church, and God has, you don't hear a whole lot of stories like this, but God has used this ministry to see deliverance take place in their lives. And so we're just so grateful. And it's really kind of become the arts hub of our city, and it's really cool to see what God has done. Most of the local theaters, they're 200 or 300 people in size. So for these artists to come and be able to perform in front of 2,000 people, you know, for these musicals, it really is like being on Broadway.
And Luke really gets behind this and champions this, because we even have staff members that will challenge when they're on their path and their ministry. It makes sense to them. Not everyone gets the arts. The amount of effort and creativity and advertising that we do give this program, because there's a lot of finances that go behind it too, it can be a little threatening to some of the other ministries. And Luke will say, there's such diversity in people. And if we limit ourselves to certain kinds of ministries, we put ourselves in a box. He's like, we have a gym ministry, don't we? We reach out to guys who want to get together and play basketball, and we have amazing testimonies that have evolved out of that ministry. Celebrate Recovery. You go right down the line. This also is a ministry and has so many testimonies that have come out of personal interaction. It's just one by one that you reach people, and it happens to be creative.
I'm going to open up for questions, but before that, you know, we can talk a lot about how the world's going to hell in a handbasket, and how this community is, you know, ruining the nation, or we can, you know, step up and try to do something about it, and try to build bridges and build relationships so that we can pop that question on in that very holy divine moment to lead them into faith. So that's what we're doing, and it's not for everybody, but for us, we feel like it's really been a big win for us in our culture. Any questions you have about church life or family life, relational life? Any questions? You raise your hand.
Crickets.
Yes.
How do you do the multi-site? What's your strategy for multi-site?
So the question is, how do we do our multi-site? This was a learning curve for us, because my dad's vision was one big campus. It's beautiful campus. So when God gave us his vision, we had to really travel around and learn how this was done. And so everything's kind of operated through a central campus for us. And we have campus pastors, and we have worship teams and children's teams. We try to do about five things well when we open a campus. We try to have really good worship music. I think that's very important. We try to teach the Word of God, you know, very clearly. And we try to have really good children's programs, and then a real clear next steps programs to get them into a place of full devotion to Jesus Christ. Once we see them saved, that everyone knows exactly how to take that next step. You referred to that on Sunday night. That's all we try to get them to do when they find the Lord, is what's the very next step, and kind of get them on that path. One of the things that we do is freedom ministry, and it's like a souped up, supercharged Celebrate Recovery ministry. That's about 4 or 5 weeks, one night a week for 4 or 5 weeks, and then a super Saturday where it's a 8-hour retreat where we come together and we teach them that if you really want to be free, that the final element is to be filled with the Holy Spirit, and if you really want to be free from your hurts and your hang-ups in life. And so that's been a big win for us. So really we try to do those things, and the last element would be the small groups. We then get them involved in a small group. We think if we do great worship music, if we teach clearly, if we have a clear next step program, take care of the kids, you know, in the youth department, and get them involved in community, if we do that very well, we think the church will grow, and we're seeing that in those campuses. Anybody? And some of our campuses are live, and some are just all, you know, live video from the Phoenix campus, the main campus. Anybody else have questions? Yes.
All right. With your productions, what is your rehearsal schedule like for that?
I don't see Angel from August till December. I mean, every night it's TV dinners. Do you want to share about that?
Yeah, we audition here August 18th, and then we cast at the end of August, and we start actual practices. Some choreographers do mid to end of September, depending on the intensity and the amount of people you've been cast and given responsibility over. And we go all the way through October. Close to Thanksgiving, we're starting to tech and dress rehearsals. If you count all of the tech and dress with the actual performances, it's close to 21 performances. And we've built a culture over years that's just normal. As we bring new people in, we have to ease them in and understand what we're asking is huge. The summer musical is 6 weeks, very much like a normal theater program that can put a whole show together in 6 weeks, but the hours are longer. So when I teach I'm going, I have three different scenes back to back. So I only do an hour for my girls. But then I'm in a couple's 40s swing that it's a 3 hour one, three times a week. So that adds up, but people can choose and decline, accept or decline however many scenes they want, depending on how motivated they are. Yeah.
So again, as context for us, a lot of churches, they really gear up for the Christmas Eve services. I look around sometimes on Christmas Eve and I kind of get depressed. I'm like, man, this so-and-so is doing 20 services. And, you know, we're only doing two services for every campus, but we just did 17 Christmas shows, you know? And so, if you get in that competition game, it'll wear you out, you know? So you have to just know what God's called you to do and, go for what God's called you to do. Yeah.
Luke, there's a lot of aging, senior pastors around the world right now, the age of pastors. What did you do well, you and your dad, in the transition? And are there any things you could have done better?
Good question. You know, I don't know if my dad thinks these things through or not, or if he just has a Midas touch. But, you know, because when I came back in 2006 to be the executive pastor of the church, he began to slightly release, you know, leadership of the church. At that time, he was traveling back and forth to Los Angeles a lot because they needed his help. And so the first thing I did was took over all the midweek teaching. And, slowly but surely, he was gone more Sunday nights, and so I took over the Sunday nights, and pretty soon I was helping with not only that, but also the Sunday mornings. We were kind of sharing that time. And so I think that by the time 2011 rolled around, I was doing probably three-quarters of the teaching. My dad was doing just Sunday mornings or half of the Sunday mornings. So when he had a heart valve repair in 2011, and he announced that Luke was going to be leading while he recovers, I think that people thought that I was already pastoring. They're like, we thought he was already kind of the guy here. So it really wasn't a big, you know, leap. I think that if you think of a track race, it's almost like when you pass that baton, you know, there's that moment where you both have your hand on the baton. I think he just, for a season, kept his hand on the baton and mine on the baton so that there was just that gradual merge and no one really felt the difference. But I think the thing that really makes it work for us, my dad was not planning on staying at Dream City. His plan was to, after he got healthy, was to move to Los Angeles, and because he said that it wouldn't be right for, you know, someone like me to stay around because people were always going to compare and tell you how great things were in the past and how it's not like it was way back then. And so if you're a senior pastor transitioning, this is very important. He would stand up all the time. And he would say, this church has never been as great as it is right now. This church is bigger than it's ever been right now. Now, I don't know if that was true or not, but he said it was true, you know. And that gave great credibility to what was taking place. Every time he gets up there, he talks about how amazing things are, how these are the greatest days of our church. Stop talking about the good old days. If you can go back to the good old days, you wouldn't want the good old days. They weren't that good. Right now is what God is doing. And so I think that like 80% of the success of the transition is on the guy who stays, if he stays. I wouldn't even recommend, unless it's a family thing, that he even stays, you know, because it's just so hard. But if it does stay, 80% really is on him, because you got to be a big person to see the successes and the changes that take place. And so that I, you know, that was just one of the biggest things. I respect my dad for a lot of things, but the way he transitioned the church is probably what I respect him for the most, because he was a guy that he was, everything went through him. That's the way he organized, you know, the church. So he had 100 organization lines going right to him. You know, that's just, he was that unique leader who could do that. I couldn't do that, so I had to organize differently. But I think that was part of the health of our church, was him just hanging on a little bit longer. Someone else had a question. Yes.
So I understand that you have the arts ministry that's there to serve the vision of the church. How are you intentional about keeping the arts from thinking that the church is there to serve them? How do you keep them from running sideways with their own arts vision?
Yeah. You want to answer that? Or?
Well, the drama director is employed, so I think that keeps it in check pretty well. he has the same heart and ministry and mission as the church, and he's a part of the staff. So he sits in staff meetings on Tuesday, and here's our goal. He is in I think in sync with Luke's overall vision, that our goal is to reach out to people, that he gets to actually use his skill sets as a ministry. And I think as you see it as a ministry, you get to entertain and perform, but it goes so much deeper than that. That's just surface. So he sees that and knows that. If that did not exist, it would not work. Because you're right, that is their world, and they would run with that. But you have a person with a ministry heart that is gifted in a certain way, and it can parallel a ministry in a church and complement it very nicely. I hope that someone answered.
No, that's good. And, you know, what I really believe is it's so important to have a weekly staff meeting where the leader just reinforces the vision over and over and over again in the hearts of the people, because that could happen with any ministry, not just the arts. And we always tell the stories of the people, the successes, the people who have found the Lord through these ministries. And we always bring it back to the bottom line is these are just tools. These are methods that God uses to reach people. It's the message that's sacred, not the method. And God uses all these different methods to reach people. So I think that weekly staff meeting, even if sometimes you don't feel like having staff meetings, you know, because it's preparation. Yeah, you got to get up, you know, early that morning. You got to get a word. You got to come, you know, encourage the people. And but that's so important to keep ingraining why we do what we do in the hearts of our people, because that's what keeps it online. And I think that also celebrating the victories of people actually finding the Lord through those ministries, you know, keeps it online as well. Good question. Anybody else have a question? Yeah, back here.
I want to know what advice you have for couples that are going into ministry. Like, I'm going to the Bible college, and my husband's going to have, like, the background role, and he's, you know, supporting me and everything through this. But is there any advice on how to kind of make it work when you have the two different roles?
Sure, yes. I think you definitely keep your home life and those connection times sacred, and identify each other, respect the individual thing, ministries you've been called to. But when you're together at home as a couple, still look to him as the leader of the house and respect him in that way. Men are developed in a way where they need to be respected and be the leader and the developer. And women are made in a certain way. Now, it doesn't mean we can't be out of our box and be going and moving and shaking in the community. But God did make men and different specifically so that when we're together in our household that we can operate as man and wife and not feel those times of competition. And make sure you connect and take those times together. A busy schedule can pull you apart. Sometimes we joke we see each other more when we travel. So make that work for you. If certain things bring you together, then capitalize on that. Build that momentum. Use that. And if home life is so busy you don't see each other and different things bring you together, then roll with that. Make that happen. Be deliberate in those times together and identify home life specifically and what your ministry life specifically.
Yeah. Good. You know, the thing that Ainge and I always did early on in our ministry when we started, we always, you've heard this before, it's nothing new, but we took it to heart. We always had a date night where we went out, we had dinner, we had a good time, saw a movie, just enjoyed, you know, each other. Now we get to travel, you know, together more, so that's kind of where we hang out a lot. Also, you know, when our kids were young, you know, we just took time, you know, with them to just enjoy that. And, you know, I remember one time I was giving our daughters a bath. They were very, very little. And I was in there just joking around, playing around, and soap was flying everywhere, you know, the suds and all that. And Angel just walked in, and she just sat there, and she just watched me just playing with the girls. And I could just see she was really touched. She was just watching this whole thing unfold. And she said, later on that night, she said, you know, I just got to be honest. When I see you in there enjoying time with the girls, that just makes me, you know, really attracted to you, you know, when you're doing that, you know. And it just does something to me. And so I gave the girls a bath every night that week. I'm like, you know, look, kid, look, mom, shampoo, you know. So those are the cleanest girls we ever had, you know. So, but I really do think that another thing is just to keep just to keep things very real and authentic, you know, in the relationship. That's one thing that my mom and dad always did. They were the same people in the pulpit as they were at home. And they never got caught up in all that legalistic stuff that, you know, never told us what kind of music to listen to, never told us, you know, what we knew, you know, what movies to see. Now, on character issues, that was a different story. On telling the truth and being persistent and, you know, integrity issues, they were very hard about that kind of stuff. But we just had a lot of fun as a family together. And I think that's so important, to keep the fun in the family. And someone else had a question over here. Yeah.
Yes, not a question, but a comment just to encourage you, although you're doing well enough, you don't need my encouragement.
Yeah, we
but
do.
But biblically encouragement, I have been setting the structure of our church up for the last year, and then about 2 months ago, the Lord gave me 1 Corinthians 12:28, and looking at it, and God setting a church first, you know, apostles, secondarily prophets, thirdly teachers, after that miracles, then gifts of healing and helps and governments and diversities of tongues. And it is a military structure. We've heard about apostles as being generals and admirals, and the church as the assembly and so forth. But I was trying to figure out where it's the miracles and afterwards is basically the staff organization of every military for over 2,000 years. But I was trying to figure out what was teachers in there and why the word teachers was used in this organization of the church. It's translated as master, teacher, or rabbi, which Jesus was. But the Greek word is didaskalosis, which at the time of Jesus was a word that was used in the Greek theater. And it meant director or producer. So these are the captains of the places out. And in the Greek theater, we went on a Footsteps of Paul tour and ended up on the island of Delos, where they talked about the Greek theater. And the Greek theater was used by the Greek states to teach the people democracy, to change their hearts and minds to be able to understand what democracy is. And so God operationally put that word teacher in there so that we, where we're at, like the Greek theater, those directors and producers, those captains, then change the hearts and the minds of people to the kingdom of God.
That's good. Yeah, good word. Amen. I think we're maybe out of time here. Thank you so much for allowing us to just share a little bit with you guys today.
Awesome. That's awesome, isn't it?